I'm not ready to escape to Canada quite yet. Plus, I don't think Canada's really the good place to escape to. This is Jay Nemro. You're listening to The Life Autistic, and it's episode number 668. And this episode's going to be all about my latest escape. There are still places in America where you can escape to find a little bit of peace from the insanity that's going on. Hey, if you don't think there's insanity in the United States, you know, that's cool. You know, the United States, the direction it's going in, at least in some way reflects what the majority of people in the United States really want. You know, you guys really are kind of a bunch of socialists. And, you know, that's cool. You guys want to do it? That's cool. I already know places where I can go to get away from you people. Okay? People who say I want to be as stupid as I can be and then I can have the government bail me out. I may be talking, I may be talking about recent decisions by the Congress in the United States for people who behave like idiots and bought houses when they couldn't afford them, that now they're going to be provided, you know, they're going to keep those houses, and everybody else will pay some exorbitant price. You know, it kind of makes me feel like an idiot, because I was actually trying to be fiscally responsible once upon a time. When I bought my house, I bought a house I could actually afford, and you know, I went forth with that kind of mindset. I know I'm an idiot. I understand. That's not necessary anymore. That's old thinking. The new thinking is just go out, buy the biggest house you can, get the crappiest loan you possibly can, and then whine until, you know, the government comes in and saves you. I understand that. But that's not what some of this episode is going to be about, really. Although it's starting to sound like it's going to go in that direction. But I don't want it to. Talk about the wonderful adventure that my sons and I had. We went on a backpacking trip. It was starting to look like this was going to be an annual affair. But after this one was over with, the boys haven't been too gung-ho about the next one. I'll tell you why in a minute. What am I going to call this show? I don't know. Finding places to escape, or trekking through places to escape, perhaps. Maybe that's the better place to do it. Hiking! We went backpacking. Oh, hiking. I prefer hiking more. The term hiking more than backpacking. I don't know why, I just do. It's shorter. It's easier to type. We went on a trip. Now, to preface this, Brenna, my younger daughter, and I went on the very route that my sons and I took just last week. In the Pecos Wilderness, up to Lone Pine Mesa, and then across and Concord, Hermit's Peak. Now, I've got to tell you that even though I expected this to be an amazing thing and to be really worth our while, it ended up being somewhat of an anticlimax, and the story may bear this out to you. You may get a deeper understanding of why it wasn't terribly exciting for the guys, really. Anyway, Brent and I had taken this trip, and the trip had taken, you know, we went up on an evening, went as far as we could, and stayed the night, and then we hiked on the entire next day. and that took all day. Stopped at Hermit's Peak, camped there, and then we went down off the mountain and met up with Mom, Lisa, my wife, my wonderful, gorgeous, and fantastic wife. Around noonish on what you could call day three. You know, it really doesn't feel like it was 3 days. It's more like a, you know, quarter of a day, and then another quarter of a day. Anyway, so that was kind of the scenario the first time. And I was basically going to mirror that scenario. We were packing for that eventuality when we went up, when I went up with the boys. Now, I got to tell you that it was a little more rigorous just for the simple reason that going up with a 13-year-old girl that can haul her own stuff and going up with four boys, only one of which can really haul his own stuff, and the other three basically hauling much less, me having to make up the difference. That was a little interesting, too. Anyway, so we started out, same basic starting place, same trailhead that we had reached before, going up to, and going on the exact same route, coming out the exact same place, same thing. Anyway, so I had 2 8-year-old boys, a 10-year-old, and my 16-year-old oldest son, Matt, a.k.a. the autistic one, and we were off and going. We started a little bit earlier because I wanted to get a little bit further down the trail than Brent and I had managed. There was a much better campsite a little bit further on from where Brent and I camped, and I wanted to make sure that we could reach that. Well, we geared up. We got all of our stuff on. My pack wasn't too bad. I think it was in the 40 to 50-pound range, maybe up to 60. I don't know. Hopefully not too bad. It didn't cause me a lot of problems. Anyway, so we started hiking. And from the very beginning, it almost felt like that we were going a lot faster than Brent and I had. I seem to recall the first big run that we went up the mountain, that it took forever. You know, you actually go on a trail through private land for about a half a mile until you actually get to the wilderness. And there's a little sign there that says, "Welcome to the wilderness, you're here, have a nice day." And, well, it doesn't really say, "Have a nice day." But it does say, this is you're now in the National Forest Wilderness, and be happy. There wasn't a big, nice, ornate sign like there is on the other side, going up Hermit's Peak from the front way, because this is a very rarely used trail at all. So, you know, it's not marked particularly well. Anyway, but it's there, and it was easy to follow. It wasn't bad. We were going really fast. I think within about an hour and a half or 2 hours of us hitting the trail, I think we hit the trail right about 2 in the afternoon, we had gotten to the campsite that Brenna was at, and it just seemed to go pretty well. I mean, I wasn't really winded terribly, and things were going pretty good. So we continued onward, got to the campsite that I had intended, or I had thought that it might be a good idea to get to, all of a half hour after that, so it was probably about, you know, 3:30 or so. Nobody was in the mood to actually stop yet. You know, the sun was still up, conditions were still excellent, and so we just kept right on going. All the way up, went got us to Lone Pine Mesa, you know, saw the Lone Pine, took some pictures. I haven't put the pictures up on the Gopher Space yet, but it'll be there soon. Trust me. just kept right on going. I estimate that first day where Brennan and I think we only got about maybe a mile. I think the boys and I got probably at least 4, maybe even 5 miles. We'd gotten all the way to the turnoff to Hermit's Peak Trail. We went down Hermit's Peak Trail, probably about another mile, and got ourselves to a bit past the gate. There is something of a alpine meadow that you go through the first part there, and then you just start, and then you hit the trees. And just as we were getting to the trees, we decided that we would go ahead and camp. So we had gotten much further than Brennan and I had the year before. I've been doing some research since then on the whole idea of bear canisters or bear bags. And I figure out that they don't cost very much. So I think I'm going to procure one just because, you know, it does make for a cheaper, for just a more carefree run. All you have to do is you have to keep all your food in your bear canister and just keep it away from camp. Of course, you cook away from camp, but you also store your stuff away from camp. Saves you having to go through the whole bear bag garbage. I know every time that I've worked and tried to work with a bear bag, I've typically gotten depressed. A lot of people camping like people out here. Anyway. So I did a little research on that because I'll tell you what happened. We tried to eat a little distance from our camp. It wasn't the regulation, I think 50 meters or 200 feet or whatever. We weren't far enough away from the tents, particularly. And we ate out there. We actually cooked right next to the tents, though. But it was only boiling water. It wasn't like we were doing anything else really exotic. Cup of soup, which isn't the most compact thing to do, honestly. Where we camp in the Pecos Wilderness, it is on the dry side. I was just looking at a whole bunch of videos, excellent videos on YouTube from a guy that hikes in Oregon, and of course in Oregon, there's constant water. You know, Oregon is water, water with a sprinkling of dirt. You know, mostly mud. And anyway, so so you have to take that into account more where we are, where a lot of people go backpacking. There's plenty of water. You know, water is a big thing in the Pecos Wilderness. You have streams. And on most years, the streams run really well. But there aren't very many. And in the hike that we were on, there is one stream at the very, very beginning, and there's one stream at the very, very end. And other than that, you don't have really any running water at all. Up on Hermit's Peak, there is Hermit's Spring. And we'll typically fill up with water there, and as you kind of work your way around, you find these rocks that have been hollowed out, I guess, by water. And I call them dog bowls. And, of course, the boys call them dog bowls now because I did. and that's where you go and you can get some water. And you'd be surprised that these small little dog bowls that don't look very impressive at all actually hold quite a bit of water, at least 2 or 3 quarts. So you don't ever want to dry out a dog bowl. That's just rude for those who follow. But any chance you get when you see a dog bowl, you stop, you pull out your filter, and you pump out some water. Hopefully just to top yourself off. Now we usually carry, and I probably am a little excessive when it comes to carrying water. Most people only need 2 containers for water. I usually carry about 2 gallons, maybe up to 3, spread out among several water bottles, you know, distributed among the people. I usually carry a gallon, Matt usually carries a gallon, and then the other kids carry whatever they have. Josh's backpack, which is actually my normal work day pack. I might have to retire this little guy pretty soon. It's kind of heavy, just by nature, and it's got some pretty cool accoutrements. It has a bladder, a water bladder in it, and we had that filled up before we left, so we had quite a bit of water. Anyway, so we stopped. Our first water bowl that we found was up on Lone Pine Mesa, just past the tree, and we stopped there and we filled up, and I had to, you know, help the boys, well, actually yell at them a bit to get them to be a little more thoughtful about water. They saw water and they started playing in it, and I immediately started just chewing them out for destroying this rare water source. And we pumped out, I think we pumped out about 1.5 quarts from that one, and it didn't even really do much of a dent to the dog bowl itself. Anyway, so I'm sorry. We camped. We went overnight. I had 2 stuffed sacks. I used those for our food bags, and I didn't really do anything. You know, I've been on hikes where we tried to nest with bear bags, tried to tie them up high and over trees and stuff like that, and the raw amount of time that you have to spend just trying to hoist the bear bag up there after you're done with all of it, with everything else, is just atrocious. It's just ridiculous. You know, most of these camps, you may do it the first day or the second day, but by and large, after that, you don't even bother. I mean, even on scout camps where you're really supposed to do this as a training thing, didn't do it after the second day because people were just too darn tired. And rarely were we hit with anything because, you know, we didn't really stay at organized campsites. The place where we were at, obviously bears had been there. It's a nice crossing path for bears. When I looked at it, I said, ooh, this isn't a good place to camp. But I did anyway because I was just too tired and didn't want to mess with, you know, going on further or trying to find someplace else. So we put it in two stuff sacks. We had tons of food, much more than we would ever need, which is always a bad thing to do. pardon me. And I just put them out there. You can tie into trees, but by and large, I guess that's not the thing to do. You just set them out there, you know. Your stuff will get bad around a bit, but then the bears, once they can't get into it, they'll pretty much just leave it alone. Bears don't really have the facilities for hiking, you know, for grabbing something and taking it with them and working it over somewhere else. So, you know, there's that. So we left this stuff out, went to bed. I think I slept better on this trip than I have on many others. What situation have I been lately? Went out and slept overnight outside. When I travel, when I'm working for, you know, work, and I'm and I set up my tent campsites in other places, I have a cot, and I've got a pretty decent pad. I might need to someday get a better pad, because I think I've got the space for it. And I usually sleep pretty good. Now, the first couple of ones this year weren't very good. This backpacking one actually went pretty well. So, slept decently, even though I didn't have a pad at all. And then I woke up in the morning, checked on the stuff, and sure enough, some little animal had gotten into our pack. I don't think it was a bear, but something else started chewing through it. They hadn't actually gotten to the food yet, but had chewed on it a bit, and chewed a nice hole, chewed a couple of straps. Maybe it just was sweaty, it tasted like salt. Anyway, so that was all the damage we really got out of everything else. You know, the actual packs worked well and slept pretty good. I wasn't in a big rush at all. You know, the boys talk about, ooh, it's cold out here, and you go, well, then stay in your sleeping bag. Well, we gotta get back on the train again. No, we don't. We're not really in a big rush. I don't know when we got off, but we tried not to get up until the actual sun was on the camp, as opposed to up in the trees, you know. Although we did sleep in a forested area, so we didn't have a lot of sun. Got up, got everything packed back up. Coco in the morning, see, this is my wife's idea of what people should be doing. And, oh, actually, we did a whole other experiment this time. Usually, at least for the last couple of years, I've been cooking with alcohol, and that worked pretty good. Very, very lightweight setup. Now, this time, on a trip about a year and a half ago to Las Cruces, about the last time that I went to Las Cruces, I stayed at, you know, I hit the sporting goods store. They have a really nice sporting goods store and a good camping section. Not much for lightweight, honestly. You know, they were much more of the price conscious people, so their stuff's kind of heavy. But they had a nice rack of Colgrim stuff. Got some squeeze tubes for the Moose Goo, for Ultralight Joe's Moose Goo. If you don't know, go to, just type in Ultralight Joe's Moose Goo in your favorite search engine, and you will come up with Ultralight Joe's website, which is like ultralightbackpacking.org or com or net or something like that. I forget what. I don't remember the actual URL, but that's the, if you type in Ultralight Joe Moose Goo, you're going to hit his site and his recipe. Very simple recipe for Moose Goo. This stuff is bug out your eyes candy in a tube. And it's made to give you lots of carbs, lots of sugar, and just to keep you going. It's made of honey and peanut butter and corn flour, which you can get really easily in New Mexico, where people make lots of corn tortillas. It's the corn flour that gets used to make tortillas. Anyway, so here we are at the beautiful, bustling metropolis of McAllister. I'll have three houses here. But a neat place, I think. Got some possibilities. Anyway, so I gotten some of that, and I gotten some of these hexamine tablets. Someplace, I think a brand name for it is Esbit. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right at all. But hexamine tablets, white tablets that are just pressed. You know, I'm not sure what they're made of. Hexamine, I would imagine. It burns really well. And it did a really good job. I found out that with the pan that I typically use to cook things, I used about 3 tablets of hexamine. I don't really know how it is expense-wise compared with denatured alcohol. Denatured alcohol is somewhat expensive. You go down to your hardware store because denatured alcohol is something that you usually use in, like, paint stripping, stuff like that. So, this is kind of its own, you know. It's pretty readily available. I don't remember it costing too much, and I've got tons of it. I got, like, a can, which is probably a little over a gallon. And, of course, I've had it for two and a half years. I don't think I've used, but maybe, you know, not even a quarter of it. So it's going to last me forever. You have to, you know, it's pretty smelly stuff. It'll eat paint off the wood. If you really want to know how that goes. But really nice, cool, it really works really well. I don't know if I'm going to stick with the tablets or not. The tablets are really nice because you don't have to have a lot of accoutrements with them. You throw them in a plastic bag along with some matches and some tin foil, and you've basically got your, not tin foil, aluminum foil. Nobody has tin foil anymore. You throw that stuff into a plastic baggie so that it's waterproof. And you throw it in your pack, and that's your fuel. So depending on how many days you have, you just pack the fuel accordingly. I use about 3 tablets to boil enough water to satisfy the needs of 5 people. If it was just me, I would have needed 1, and I probably wouldn't have used the whole thing up, boiling enough water for my one meal. If I ever decide to go solo, and I don't know if my wife will ever permit it. If nothing else, I'll take my son Matt. He's autistic. Matt's basic purpose for being anywhere is to be companionship and to help me get down off of the mountain if I start having problems, you know. It's always safer to have 2 pack mules if one of them goes lame than to just have 1. Of course, if you're careful with yourself, you don't even have to worry about the 1. Anyway, so I'm still going on about this. So we checked, we saw the animal got into our stuff. We got up, we had cocoa, and I forget what else we had for breakfast. Whatever was on the schedule. It was pretty good. Anyway. Lisa always taxes very well for food. It's always excessive. We've always got more than we can actually stand. Anyway, so I got back on the trail, hit it good. Guys were excited. There's a big dog bowl, the first dog bowl that Brenna and I stumbled across, which is a really large one. Right there on the trail. And there's some good things you have to work to think about on trails. There are piles of rocks to help guide your way, especially through areas where even a well-traveled trail isn't very obvious. Because, you know, if it's grassy and the grass hasn't grown up too much, you can see the trail. It's a dirt trail running through the midst of grass. Really obvious to see. You can see it ahead of you. Even if the grass has grown up, you'll see this cut in the grass where the trail is. And that helps a lot, too. Mostly these are cow trails that people use, too. Because there's lots of cattle up here. And cattle like taking the trails, too. you have to follow piles of rocks, and it's always a good idea to add a couple of rocks to the pile to make sure, the first thing you have to do is make sure it doesn't look natural. If it looks natural, then you won't be able to tell it from any other pile of rocks anywhere. So you stack them up pretty high and pretty pointy, and people kind of go, oh, look, it's stuff like that. Ooh, boy, is that a porcupine or a skunk? I think it's a porcupine. Got hit by a car. Two quills everywhere. What's fun? And it's a real, I find it to be almost a philosophical / religious analogy to follow the trail that's been left before. You can look at that in a Christian standpoint and saying, you must follow Christ. Christ set an example for the way you should live your life, and he left instructions. And if you were to look at your journey through life as a trail in a wilderness, you would want to be watching for piles of rocks left by those who have gone before you, showing the way that they went. These are markers left behind by people who have taken the journey and successfully completed it. People with more experience than you have. It also leads to the whole thing of respecting experience, following a trail that's already been blazed by somebody else. I'm not trying to take away from the fact that people might want to blaze their own trails. Now, in the wilderness, you don't want to do that. You don't want to blaze new trails. You might want to get off of the track, and that's okay, too. That's accommodated for to a degree. You don't want to leave... You know, you don't want to destroy things. That's certainly what you don't want to be doing in the wilderness. If you're going to be following a trail, make sure you follow the trail. So, anyway, you can take all kinds of connotations that way. We got to the first dog bowl, which is about halfway from Lone Pine Mesa up to Hermit's Peak. And we got there pretty early. You know, it was still quite morning. And the boys were excited, doing well, and feeling good, so we just kept right on pressing along. And as things started going uphill, the kids just kept doing it. They love being called mountain goats, and they took to it with excitement and happiness and joy and wanting to do some more. So... And it was starting to get stormy. It's been a good monsoon year. We get monsoon seasons in New Mexico. We don't have an official rainy season like you could say, okay, in this day the rain start and in this day the rain stop every year. You know, it isn't as regular as, say, it is like in the Serengeti in Africa. You can almost depend on it. You know, here's your rainy season and then it stops. We do have times when rain's much more likely, and when it's gonna happen, if it's gonna happen at all. But there's all kinds of days when it's not going to happen, when there isn't going to be any rain, or at least not any sizable amount. We usually get two or three good rainstorms a year on a typical kind of droughty year. You know, it may come down 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 inches that day, but that may be all the rain you ever get. This has been a monsoon season. It's been very good. We've gotten rain quite often, actually quite early. Monsoon season is typically more toward the latter part of August, when you're going more toward your harvest time, although our harvest time extends all the way into October. But anyway, so it's been a really early, good rain, beautiful year for growing things. I'm waiting for my tomatoes to come up. But especially up in the mountains, it just rains. You can almost anticipate that it's going to rain on you during these monsoon seasons. And of course, it's the monsoon season, and the clouds were coming up. I had seen them before, but they hadn't been coming very quickly. So I was hoping that we were going to get to Hermit's Peak before... all the excitement began. Well, we were, you know, I am a cruddy judge of distance. I'm just totally horrible. People ask me, well, how far away is that? And you go, you know what, I don't know. Now, after I've traveled the trail many times, I can give people some kind of an estimate as to how long it may take, how long I've timed it as taking on several occasions. But as for just being a judge of it, looking at a, you know, look, just having done it maybe once like I had on this trip, I'm no judge. I thought we were getting pretty close to top. It sprinkled on us a little bit, but I wasn't concerned about that. I wasn't ready to start pulling out rain gear for fear of anything. Because I was trying, we were making this kind of sprint for Hermit's Peak. Now, we were doing this a lot earlier. When Brenna and I had done it, we hadn't gotten up to the top until late evening of day two. Here we are. It wasn't even noon yet, and we were getting pretty close to the peak. Of course, that was where we planned on camping. We were trying to follow the same kind of camping trip that Brenna had had. And the whole point of sitting up there for 8 hours waiting for sunset to come struck me with terror because, you know, my sons are have various circumstances that make these situations somewhat unsafe. The likelihood of one of my sons pitching themselves off of the side of the cliff, and Hermit's Peak is something of a raised mountain. It's more of a flat land that had actually been raised by another piece of land going under it and raising it up. It's not a volcanic mountain. It is not a mesa, as in, you know, wind and water had eroded down everything around it and had left this plateau, which is more of what we get out here in eastern New Mexico. It's an actual mountain, but I think it's called a heave mountain. It's one that was heaved up as opposed to anything else. Good mountain, good high quality though. I mean, it's up above 10,000 feet. We were up pretty high. Anyway, so we were getting really close to the top, and all of a sudden the rain started falling. And I figured that it wouldn't be too bad, so I just said, press on, you know, we're going to keep going, and we're going to get up to the, you know, we're going to get up, because that was where we were going to take off the packs and relax and have lunch. And although we did get there, we were soaked by the time we got there. There was a bit of a hailstorm. The hail wasn't very big, but it was certainly, turtle on the road, gotta watch those turtles. We haven't gotten to the point where the tarantulas are out. For people who keep up with that, every now and then we have tarantula talk around here. Because on the back road, you'll see a lot of tarantulas out during mating season, going out and stretching their legs and trying to impress the girls and, you know, making the great circle of life. But, I'm sorry, I'm euphemizing that, because this is something of a family podcast. I don't like talking about subjects that might make people squirm too much. We finally got to the top, and, we were soaked to the skin. Our equipment was all wet. I had some spare clothes that were kind of wrapped up, but they probably got hit too. Our sleeping bags were certainly wet, and it didn't look like there was going to be much of a possibility of the rain letting up enough to let our stuff dry out properly, especially sleeping bags. Sleeping bags are horrid. They take in water and they never let it go. So you want to keep those dry, you know, before anything else. So, anyway, let me see. I'm checking my email here. Don't have any voice messages. Those are the most pressing things. So we finally made it up to the top. Now, when you're at the top of Hermit's Peak, I usually take a cell phone with me because you can usually get pretty decent coverage up there. It's way up high. It overlooks a town of about 25, maybe 30,000, Las Vegas, New Mexico. Not Las Vegas, Nevada. That's much larger. Las Vegas, New Mexico. And, excuse me. Anyway, so I got out the phone. Of course, it was dumping rain on me, so I had to do it through a plastic bag. Now, I had brought enough rain gear for everybody, with some caveats, but Matt and I were the only one with actual formal ponchos. The other guys were using plastic bags, you know, over their bodies. And of course, that's always somewhat tricky. Anyway, so we've gotten up there, soaked to the bone, finally got a call through. There was lightning dancing around, the thunder crashing, the whole thing, hail coming down. And finally got a phone call through and just said, come get us now. Drop everything, come get us now. We're soaked to the bone. I'm afraid the boys are going to get hypothermia. Kind of worried about myself, too. And so I talked to the boys. The boys were gung-ho about getting off the mountain. It was all nice and fun when it was dry, but now that it was wet and rainy, they were not happy. This was not what they wanted to be about. So, and plus, it was really early. It was just barely afternoon. And we pulled out a little bit of food to kind of take with us going down the trail, of which we had tons of food, so it was no problem. We had a huge bag of Gorpy trail mixy type stuff, at least put together, that we munched on all the way down. Then we started booking it down. Of course, my kids were shivering. Poor Matt, which is my skinniest guy, he was just, Dad, I'm cold. And of course, you know, I'm saying, guy, wouldn't this be great if I lost somebody up here due to hypothermia? So I decided the most intelligent thing to do was just to be to take it down as fast as we could. If you keep moving, it's hard to get, hypothermia usually hits you when you're stationary and cold. If you're moving and cold, it's a little bit better. So we mostly kept our rain gear on to try to keep the wind off, because the wind started blowing up, and that always will really cool you off. And that's not good. That wasn't good. It was on the cold side anyway. And so we started just booking it down the mountain. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Of course, the kids were whining, Dad, we want to take a rest. And then we take a little bit of a rest, get some water. I may have drank a lot of water, which they didn't like too much. The twins are just little sippers, and that's not useful, I think. I'm more of a super hydration guy, you know, to say that if I do run into a situation where I can't get to water or where I have to be in a situation without water, I want to have super hydrated myself so that I can stay alive longer. One has to consider life and limb when one is going in the wilderness, because nobody else is there to save you. One of the big things about freedom and getting away from other people is you lose that kind of safety net that comes with having people all around you. Now, that gets obfuscated sometimes in big cities, because even if you're sitting there dying, people will think you're just, you know, mooing for attention, and they'll walk right past you. You can go, please, I'm dying, I'm sorry, can I get some water, please? And they would go, you're just fishing around for handouts. And it's like, I don't want money, I want water, It's sad when our world gets to that point. But, anyway, so when you're up in the wilderness, you definitely don't have that. We didn't see another soul our entire trip. Of course, I think it was because the weather was kind of interesting. And it was a Friday afternoon. People hadn't gotten off of work and gotten themselves up into the mountains yet. And so we were We were all by ourselves. Didn't see another soul the entire trip. After we left Lisa, the next person we saw was Lisa at the other end. We got that off the boat. Let's go off at about 3:30 in the afternoon. So what had taken Brenna and I probably a day, a good solid day and a half, had taken the boys not even a full, almost just exactly a full day. And they did great. They did that. Boy, let me tell you, I was stiff. I'm still sort of stiff. I don't think I've fully recovered from it because I've had several things I needed to do that were kind of physical since then. And I've never given myself much of a chance to recover. And I guess that's good in a way because, you know, that tension will keep you going and you'll become a stronger person, which I really need to do. Plus, I need to get my calorie burning rate up, set my body thermostat higher so it'll burn more fuel because I eat more. I tend to eat more than I really need to. And you kind of want to burn that off. I'm going to get back on the bike soon. That cow does not look like a cow sleeping. That looks like a cow dead. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm not a big fan of cows. I like to eat them, though. But I'm much more of a chicken level of person. You know, I can do the whole process of hatching them, raising them, slaughtering them, and processing them. Can be done on a home scale, where with cows, it's really difficult. You have to have specialized tools and all that. Most people have all the tools needed to handle chickens in their yard. Anyway, so that was our experience of getting away from civilization. I tend to like bigger ones than that one. But, you know, you take what you can get. I went up and I spent time with my boys. They've been bugging me, and that was good because we needed to do that. Lisa's all proud of me, and she's a wonderful dad. I try. I'm still thinking of going backpacking a little bit more this year. Go up a little bit further. I think I'd like to take Matt if I could talk him into it. I think after this trip he's not in the mood. Or I might take Josh. Josh is homeschooled now, so he can just take a couple of days off, and go with Dad, and go do stuff. So we can go, oops, snake on the road. I don't like running over snakes. Try to avoid that. Maybe go back up and do it again with Josh again. I just seem to have this need to kind of get, I don't know if it's really a question of solitude, but it's a need to get out and to get away and to recharge. I feel more need to recharge than I have in the past. Although I must say that my job gives me much of these opportunities. In the car, by myself, traveling, is one of my preferred states. And works well for me. Anyway, this is Shane Emerow. That was pretty long. I hope it wasn't too long, too rambling. You know, it didn't have a lot of information or insight. Just to kind of report on some of the things I've been doing. It was interesting. All the boys survived well. We got home. They were just fine and sprightly. I was the one that suffered the most. I think I got a bit of a fever and I had to get some extra sleep. And what else happened? Anyway, took care of. And I'm still a little. My muscles are still a bit sore. Although, boy, let me tell you, am I well defined again. You know, and I want to kind of keep that up. Gotta keep going. Gotta keep rolling. So I've been trying to hike more when I camp out for work. I'll set up my camp, I'll get everything ready, and then I'll go hiking on trails, because I usually stay at state parks, so I usually have trails associated with them. And that's really good, it gets me kind of in shape, keeps me in shape for things that I do. Anyway, this is Jane Emro, you're listening to The Life Autistic, this is episode number 668, and let me make sure I got my pointer here, it's wandered up there. Have a great day.